The Red Eye Radio podcast is a service of Freightliner and Detroit.
Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or just starting your day, welcome to the show. From the Pilot Flying J Studios, this is Red Eye Radio.
Hello and welcome. He is Gary McNamara. I'm Eric Harley as we move into a Tuesday. Gary, what's going on?
Well, it's another day.
It is?
Yes.
Okay, fine.
By the way, as we continue the discussion today, we will tell you about the new study out there that today's politics may be hazardous to your health. Bunch of friends of mine posted that on, you know, on Facebook. It's getting out of control. I mean, the politics, it's hurting people. You know what my response was? What do you think it was like in 1861?
Yeah. Right.
That was about it. What do you think it was like in 1861? Oh, we have it so bad. I can't handle the news. Yeah.
Relax.
You weren't 20 years old in 1861.
Yeah. Yeah. How about we all take a breath, please?
Yeah. Well, it, you know, it's we live in amazing times. Coming up on the show today, talk to me this Friday or next Friday about the whole situation in Syria. You know how we have the whole Friday thing. Mm-hmm. What will things be like next Friday? You know, the big question is, I mean, the U.S. News report that came out yesterday that a senior administration official said, well, we're actually not pulling out of Syria. We're actually not, you know, what in the world's going on? The president then, you know, coming out. And we stated this yesterday when the story was so new. And we said, look, when something comes out like this and it's basically a statement where we have no details, we hold off on it.
Right.
We did the same thing when the president announced, remember, that we were going to remove troops from Syria. And we said, let's wait a few days and see where this happens. Because to talk about a statement that the president puts out about Syria, as we have seen in the past, can change day by day.
Well, actually, about 24 hours ago, the story that was breaking actually did say that we're not leaving Syria. We're just moving troops out of northern Syria. And so the one from U.S. News and World Report seems to go along with that, that we're not leaving Syria altogether. Then you had other stories yesterday about this time that were saying we're withdrawing completely from Syria.
Right.
Now, the first couple of stories that I read yesterday, well, it would be Sunday night into Monday morning, said that we're not leaving Syria, we're leaving that region. So, and there were anywhere from, and the reports varied anywhere from 50 to 150 specialized troops that were in northern Syria that are leaving northern Syria.
By the way, we are going to talk about it. It's just, I get to the point whenever we get to these things that it's like, you know, because the president came out yesterday then and talked really tough. If Turkey gets out of line here, wait a minute. So if you pull out 100 troops and Syria does something wrong, you're going to send 10,000 troops in?
Well, see, that's my concern with it. And so Turkey gets out of line, then what? Remember when it was when we had 2,200 troops and they announced we're going to do a complete withdrawal? This was what, a year ago? A year ago. And a lot of people that were supporting the president in that move were saying, well, it's great because we've defeated ISIS in Syria and now it's time to go. And we were like, well, hold on. That wasn't the point of actually going into Syria.
And we haven't defeated ISIS.
And we haven't defeated ISIS just because they may not be there and have their strong points there. Keep in mind, they're not a true caliphate. They have not established any real estate anywhere except Mosul. They did for 33 months. But, of course, Iraq came back and defeated them in that effort ultimately. But it took 33 months to do it. The point being is that Syria has been, or ISIS has been, rather fluid. Of course, everybody seems to forget that. We're not there to run them out. We're not there to we're not there to defeat ISIS. And the question is, what do you do when there's a vacuum that's created?
Well, the majority of the president's defense yesterday was Rand Paul populist stupidity.
Right.
That's what the defense was. I mean, it was dumb. Well, we shouldn't be the world's policemen. Well, then fine.
Right.
If that's your point of view, then pull the 617 troops out of El Salvador.
Yeah.
Pull out the 682 troops in Romania. Pull out the 852 troops in Belgium. Pull out the 1,112 troops in Australia. Pull out the 1,510 from the United Arab Emirates. Pull out the 1,556 from Jordan. Pull out the 2,139 troops in Turkey. Pull out the 3,216 troops from Qatar. Pull out the 3,200 troops from Spain. Pull out the 5,000 troops from Bahrain. Pull out the 5,800 troops from Kuwait. Pull out the 8,000 troops from Great Britain. Pull out the 12,000 troops in Italy. Pull out the 34,000 troops in Germany and the 38,000 troops in Japan. If you don't want to be the world's policemen, then pull the troops out of there, too. But to take an area of the world where we actually know we have a war with them that they've been fighting for the longest time, remember, it's all a form of Islamic radicalism, is it not?
Mm.
And we all know what the 9/11 Commission said. The problem was they were fighting us. We weren't fighting them. If we're going to repeat, and the president wishes to repeat the stupidity of this country that believes if we pull out and don't fight them, that they're not planning to fight back at us and attack us and not willing to grow, well, then we get what we deserve down the road.
Well, it's, you know, when you create, again, you create that vacuum. That's what
create the vacuum.
That's the problem in a situation like that. But if you do want to be a true isolationist, then be it.
Then be it.
He's commander in chief. Then do it. And we can talk about our enemy, and if we want to sit here and wait for them to come to American soil again, we can do that too.
Why in the world is the president in every budget that gets a huge overrun talk about we're spending tons more in the military? Why?
Well, he spoke about ammunition and how the generals came to him. One general came to him and said, we don't have any ammunition to fight with. And then talked about, too, in that same speech, talked about having to write letters to the families of the fallen. I can't imagine what it's like as commander-in-chief. I can't imagine what it's like being a Gold Star family. However, what I can say is it's one or the other. As commander-in-chief, you have to make the decision. What do you need ammunition for if they're coming home?
Well, not even ammunition, because you can make the case you can use ammunition to defend the homeland. Get rid of the Navy.
Hmm.
Why do we have the Navy all over the world? Why do we have an Asian fleet, a Middle Eastern fleet?
Sure. Right.
If it's time to bring people home, then bring them home, if that's your... But don't throw out the stupid, asinine philosophy where we're actually fighting a current war with an enemy that wishes to destroy us, and then make the stupid, idiotic statement that you're doing it because it's time to bring the troops home and we can't be the world's policemen. Then have the guts to follow through. But to do something that's this idiotic is just absolutely mind-boggling, and then have a stupid excuse like the president did. It was asinine.
Well, he was all over the place one speech.
It was all over the place.
Again, your point taken, certainly with ammunition at home, but that was in regards to fighting a war at the time in country.
Right.
Well, which is it? Again, I'm not commander-in-chief. You have to make that decision. The fact of the matter is, he knows this. Obama knew it. That you're going to have to do things as president that are not easy to do, because you're going to need to fight the enemy off and outside of American soil.
Well, you saw the president felt the pressure when he came out. Well, if they step out of line, we're going to get him. And, you know, Lindsey Graham, one of his biggest defenders. And look, on impeachment, we're because we defend the law, we've been, you can make the point, well, you guys are defending the president. We're defending the law, but we're also defending the president. You know, and how many times we've said he is legit president, he's done nothing to be impeached, but this is just stupid. Lindsey Graham called him right out, said, they're lying.
It's just, again, you look at the makings of a very bad situation. And when did we take the lead from Turkey, from Erdogan especially? When did we start doing that?
In this case, I have no idea how the president thinks. No idea. We've been down this road already. We know where the flashpoints are in the world, where our troops are actually needed. We know who is the greatest threat when it comes to, we've seen it. We've experienced. History has shown us who is willing to attack the United States. We know it. There are places where we have to be. And that's one place where we have to have a presence. But really what got me was not the, what wasn't even, again, that got to me, but the populist asinine reasons the president was giving yesterday. It was right out of the Ron Paul handbook. Mm-hmm. Oh, we shouldn't be the policemen. Then pull them out of all these other countries. Why are we in peaceful countries? That's a place where actually we know our enemy is. Mm-hmm. ISIS is our enemy.
Mm-hmm. Well, look at their presence all over Europe. Extremists in general, but because I think you hit that point earlier. And it's about, this is something people need to remember. It doesn't matter if it's Al-Qaeda. It doesn't matter if it's a so-called lone wolf or small cell or ISIS. The name doesn't matter. It's the same mindset. It's extremists all over the world. Look at their presence. Look at the number of attacks in Germany alone.
I would like to, and I don't know. I mean, I don't know what the numbers are, but I could be relatively safe to say because we did not fight the war against Al-Qaeda, as we found out after 9/11, and we're talking Islamic radicalism, and if the president believes it's just going to go away if we move out because it's time to bring the troops home and we can't be the world's policemen, just remember, how much money has the United States spent since 9/11 just for security inside the United States?
Right.
And so if it's money, the other thing, I haven't gotten to the point of you don't let your most loyal allies down. There isn't another entity that's lost as many troops in the fight against ISIS as the Kurdish.
Right.
As the Kurds.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They've been the most loyal. And the president yesterday, well, yeah, they fought with us, but we gave them money and equipment. As the Wall Street Journal said, what? So you're worried about a transaction and not the morality of the fight that you're in?
Yeah, there's a reason you back it.
Right. There's a reason you back it because they're doing your bidding. What? We were giving them military and monetary help to do what? To do something opposite of what we believed in, or to do our bidding and to do the things that we wish them to do because we were in agreement with it? Horrible day for the president yesterday. Horrible day. And any criticism he gets is completely and totally justified. It was stupid yesterday.
Well, he had few defenders, very few. And it was very apparent when he was talking. He knew that. And the question is there something to this U.S. News and World Report? Is there something there? Or is it, again, the mixed messaging that comes out from this administration on a regular basis? Because going back through the stories from 24 hours ago, you know, there's a handful of them that do say, we're just pulling troops out of that area. They're not leaving Syria. So here's a question beyond that. What about those troops that fought hard with the Kurds? All for naught. Wall Street Journal. For the Kurdish rebels, for Kurds in Syria, a conflict renewed. You start again at zero.
Mm-hmm.
And they're looking for essentially new backing. I mean, there is no greater backing than that of the U.S., even though we're talking relatively few troops. That kind of backing that we gave them, you can't get in other places. So where do they turn?
If the president wonders, because we always get the calls, why aren't the Republicans backing the president on impeachment? They never know which way he's going to go. Mm. He's too unpredictable to say, I'm going to be loyal to this guy. That's the problem.
Yes, right. That's the problem on every level, with trade, with geopolitical situations, with conflicts, with national defense, essentially. There's, I guess, one exception, and that is border control, even though he doesn't right now have the power in the House to get it done.
Right. But it was the reasons that he gave. Pure populist poppycock is what he gave yesterday. Because if you don't want to be the world's policeman, we've got 50 other countries that are totally in peaceful areas that you could pull troops out of. We've got a navy that you could cut in 1/10 if you're not going to be the world's policeman. There are places where we're actually needed, and our presence is needed, and our support is needed, and our loyalty is needed, and that's one of them, especially with the Kurds. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Carly, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. By the way, the number of troops that I read came from the end of 2017, beginning of 2018. U.S. government figures of where our troops are all over the world. And my passionate opinion comes from the fact that I believe that the president's reasoning was just so asinine and stupid, and it's based on the security of America. There are places we need to be around the world in order to be secure as Americans. We saw that after 9/11.
Right.
We saw that when we allow Islamic radicalism, whatever form it comes in, whether it's ISIS or Al-Qaeda, or even in Turkey, the president of Turkey, even if it's light radical Islam, we know where it exists. And in those areas, we have to have influence. We have to have impact. And the buck has to stop somewhere. It's just the reality of the fight that we're in. And if we're not, we have seen it will come to our shores.
Yep,
my opinion, my passion, my anger on this issue is based all on American security, not helping other countries, but the security of America.
For Travel Centers of America, here's your forecast.
The frontal boundary that's delivered some much cooler temperatures to Texas and the South is continuing to push eastward. We'll see the rain showers from overnight continue to move off the East Coast today, but extend from the New England states down through New York and the Mid-Atlantic. Late tonight, cooler conditions will prevail across most of the nation, thanks to that cooler air coming in from Canada. Tomorrow, look for another snowmaker to take shape in Iowa, in western Montana, and northwestern Wyoming. If you have travel plans in and out of the Pacific Northwest, check ahead on conditions at your ultimate destination. Looking ahead for places like Great Falls, Montana, the focus of the most recent blizzard, is expecting another foot of snow. That'll begin on Tuesday night and continue through the day through tomorrow. There's a look at your national forecast from Red Eye Radio. I'm meteorologist John Trout.
okay, whatever. Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. I'm sorry, just laughing because Eric was talking about the liberal response to the movie The Joker now. I just find that she was so humorous.
All right, so, you know, there were these warnings. A lot of the movie theater owners were coming out. The companies were saying, okay, no dressing up and no, you know, we're going to go through your bag. Security is going to be tighter, right? Keep in mind, The Joker related to the Batman story. The Batman story related to Aurora, Colorado. So then there were a lot of the liberal media. You know, I forget who it was that first asked Joaquin Phoenix, you know, essentially, how do you feel about this and the fact that, or the idea that people could come to the theater and commit an act of violence, right? And his response to that was essentially, look, I'm not here, you know, to set someone's morality. You know, I'm just making movies. That's, you know, I'm paraphrasing, but that's basically the essence of it. But the director is a guy, Todd Phillips, is a guy who has been critical of Hollywood and what do they call it? The cancel mentality or whatever it is.
The cancel culture.
The cancel culture. And he said, you know, he's made the same point that I guess Dave Chappelle has made through his comedy and others have made, saying you can't make movies in Hollywood. By the way, I don't know if this guy, if Todd Phillips is a conservative or not, because I've seen Jamie Foxx and other comedians make the same point that you can't get away with comedy in movies these days. You can't do that. You know, there's so many jokes you can't put in, and the writing has changed. Well, so, you know, he made some kind of, apparently along the way, Todd Phillips made some kind of, you know, comment. So what's a guy to do? Well, how about I take one of these comic book stories and really, you know, drive Hollywood crazy with this? In other words, you know, go over the top, go crazy with it. And that's basically what they did. I don't know the backstory of the Joker. I didn't read comics going up. I know vaguely, you know, about the whole Batman versus Joker thing, but that's it. Everybody says, I see the feedback from actual people, and they say it's a great movie. I haven't seen it yet.
Yeah, I have no interest in seeing it myself.
But I like Joaquin Phoenix. I'm actually going to try and go see it because, you know, with our schedule, we can actually go during the day when there's nobody there. But, you know, I do want to go see it. But the thing is that I'm wondering if the liberal media is going after him going after the movie because of him and what he has said about that cancel culture. You know, you've got to be very careful in Hollywood these days about what you say. Again, I don't know if the guy's a conservative or not, but calling, you know, Hollywood out for the inability to just enjoy comedy or enjoy entertainment for the sake of entertainment is something that will get you in trouble. You want to call Hollywood out, well, they'll call you back, and then all of a sudden, the media's, you know, on to you, and then they'll be doing the interviews and their take. And I think it was Babylon Bee had the headline, something to the effect of, you know, Hollywood is horrified at the lack of violence at the Joker theater showings. You know, and it really is.
They are just crazy.
It's insane. But, you know, I think there's probably something to that. I mean, I'm kind of watching that criticism of this movie. And again, I understand because it was the FBI. The FBI actually did come out and say, look, you know, you should be aware that this did happen with a movie related to it. And it's just like TSA. You know, Richard Reed, the shoe bomber, is the reason we take off our shoes.
Mm-hmm.
They react to things that have happened in the past.
Right.
And that's just, you know, the fact of the matter. But I do wonder if Hollywood or if the left is going after this movie just simply because of the position or comments of the director in the past. And
well, they went after Joaquin Phoenix.
I mean,
he was, you know, said I'm not going to talk about it anymore.
Right.
He had it, you know, with them saying it's a movie. But when you see what's going on the left, where everything is about the cancel culture, it's about censoring. It's really amazing how things have changed.
Well,
and, you know, from what liberalism was to what liberalism is today, which, as we have said today, is much more of a fascist mindset than any major political mindset is in the United States today. And it's restricting people's freedom. It's restricting choices. And you see it all across the board in movies that they don't like, in speakers they don't like. It's disappointing, but it's where they are right now. Yeah. And the only thing is, I think that the American people need to wake up and understand that is the, that's the case. That's where they're going.
Well, I mean, it's I don't know. I was talking to somebody close to me earlier. I know this was actually a while back, over a month ago, talking to them about comedy and what comedy will be in the future. You know, I mean, just stand up. It will look very different. It really will. It has over the ages. Our sensibilities change as to what's funny, right? You know, you start with "Take My Wife, Please," you know, and then you evolve to Jerry Seinfeld asking what's up with airline food, or, you know, and then making observations, and then George Carlin in the brilliant fashion that he was able to lay things out. And then you get to today, and everything has to be woke. It's funny because Brian Regan was on and Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee with Jerry Seinfeld, and he said he was sitting on a panel with younger comedians, and they were asking him about, you know, essentially the sensibilities, and do you asking him effectively, how much thought do you put into, you know, your comedy, and I guess how it will be received by others. In other words, asking him, are you woke during your comedic writing procedure? And if you know anything about Brian Regan, he's just a guy who is silly on stage. He doesn't work blue. He just doesn't. It's really, he said it, there's really no reason for it. Some people do it as a sense of morality. He doesn't really have a reason for working clean. He just works clean. That's just what he does. He just makes observational things, usually about himself, self-deprecating stuff. And it's very funny. But when you get on, when you, and I love watching stand-up specials because I love watching comedians I've never seen before. But when you watch some of them, you can tell they're really walking on eggshells. They're going out of their way to be overly sensitive. Yeah. And that's never been the point of comedy.
Well, I wonder that in the entertainment business, and you and I asked this question, and I don't know what the answer is. Only the future can answer it. And when you look at some of the comedians out there, when you look at, and, you know, we'd mentioned Dave Chappelle and Bill Burr, who also has a special out, which is just brutal against political correctness, whether you will have, especially because, you know, Bill Burr's like 51 and Dave Chappelle's got to be what, around 50 right now?
Yeah, I think so.
And so they may be a little bit older, but you're going to have, eventually you are going to have, I've predicted this. I haven't seen it yet. Well, maybe in some college campuses you have, you know, you have seen it, and you do see some young people that have come out and do not fit the stereotype of what they're supposed to fit right now. I can't think of the one woman who testified before Congress, even though she's not a comedian. The reason we have our gavels.
Oh, because Nadler yes. called her out on something she didn't. Stacey Abrams.
No. Stacey Abrams.
I'm thinking of Georgia. But isn't it Stacey somebody? Isn't her first name Stacey?
No, I don't. Candace Owen. Yeah.
Okay.
But you see how, you know, she is part of that leading in the forefront, and mm-hmm. somebody who is just is going against the grain of political correctness of liberalism and attacking it at the highest levels. And so I just think that young people who tend to be I don't care what what our culture is or whether we go through those periods of pulling yourself up by the bootstraps or let's take care of you through a socialist government. You always have young people that eventually revolt.
Well,
they eventually revolt, and when they're told what to do and how to think, and in college campuses are told what to think, you can get away with the generation of it, but eventually there will be a revolt. And I do believe that hopefully this is the beginning of it. And a lot of times these revolts start in entertainment and start with stand-up comedians.
Well, there was an NPR podcast that went off on Todd Phillips and this director of The Joker, and they were talking about how he directed The Hangover. And going back, and they're saying, his comedy has this racist overtone. I'm paraphrasing. But his style of comedy has this racist overtone. Well, again, we can go back to, like, Jamie Foxx said on a podcast one time. He was asked, do you think you could make movies like, it was the one with Robert Downey Jr., who played a black guy, who played a white guy playing a black guy in the movie. Tropic Thunder?
Yeah, Tropic Thunder, yes,
yeah.
Yes.
Said, he was asked, do you think you could make a Tropic Thunder today? And he said, well, I don't know, I don't think so, essentially was his answer. And the point being is that everybody gets it. Nobody thinks Robert Downey Jr. or the writers or the directors were racist. But if you're going to come away from here's the thing. You don't have to like the movie. You don't. It's subjective. I've liked a lot of movies that the critics said were crap and vice versa. They've liked a lot of movies that I think were crap. But if the point is you're going to see a comedy, if you don't like the style of comedy, if it offends you, fine, get up and walk out. But it's beyond that. It gets to a tone where you're called out repeatedly. They do nothing but troll you. The fact of the matter is, if you don't like it, vote with your dollar. And I guess things will come around. But I think there's something very different going on with Hollywood in general. And also today's social media society, it's more about shaming than it is dislike.
866-90-RED-EYE.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley. I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90 Red Eye. The consensus of opinion on how we started out the show today, criticizing the president for his Syria policy again. Almost, I would say, it's uniform that there's a united front stating that he's a deal maker and you need to trust him.
Mm-hmm.
No blind loyalty here on this show, folks. When you're wrong, you're wrong.
Well, I mean, I think we should all practice that. It doesn't matter whether you vote for the person, you can and or plan to vote for them again. That's fine. But if they do something you disagree with, that's the whole point, is calling them out.
Exactly. And calling the president out last time when he suggested pulling all the troops from Syria, calling out is what turned him around on that one.
Right.
There was no deal making in that. He realized that the political firestorm was there. Whether he is, and there's an evolution here, or whether he stated something first and caught everybody off guard, and now there will be negotiations within the White House and the Pentagon or whatever, we shall see. That's why we said, our final conclusions in a week or two. Because the president says a lot of these things and nobody knows where he's going on it, from day one, that doesn't help. That's not a good thing.
Right.
I don't care how you look at it. The only defense so far has been, well, we have blind loyalty to the president. Well, if you wish to do that, there's nothing that we can do. In the real world, it doesn't work that way.
No, it doesn't.
Right.
No.
It doesn't work that way.
And again, I think this situation is in Syria is very fluid. Because... Tell me what Turkey is going to do inside of Syria's borders that Assad is going to approve. Tell me what they would do there, what their presence would be there, how they would have a presence inside the border of Syria, and Assad do nothing. Because that's some of the, right now, the theories going around. One of the theories is that Assad essentially backs the Kurdish rebels. So what does that look like?
Well, as I said, we can have the discussion about what will go on, but it was the president's populist explanation that we can't be the world's policeman and we need to bring everybody home.
Yeah.
It's that kind of dumb political rhetoric that I object to. That's what gets me angry.
Exactly. And that's my point, is that if there is a huge skirmish there, then what's our position if this turns into a real mess?
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or just starting your day, welcome to the show. From the Pilot Flying J Studios, this is Red Eye Radio.
All across America and around the world. 866-90-RED-EYE, redeyeradioshow.com, where we stream live. I'm Gary McNamara. He's Eric Harley. Good morning.
This hour for Freightliner. Run smart. Helping you run more efficiently is Freightliner's number one goal.
All right. Couple of stories out there. Talk show host Ellen DeGeneres responded gracefully to the online anger, outrage, after she sat next to former President George W. Bush at the Cowboys game on Sunday. The openly gay celebrity, this from TheBlaze.com. was destroyed by many on the left for sitting next to the former president they saw as diametrically opposed to her political beliefs. On Monday, she answered her critics. People were upset. They thought, why is a gay Hollywood liberal sitting next to a conservative Republican president? Here's the thing. I'm friends with George Bush. In fact, I'm friends with a lot of people who I don't share the same beliefs that I have. We're all different. I think we've forgotten that it's okay that we're different. Well, she has to be marginalized now, does she not?
No, it's not okay that we're different. It's not okay.
Remember, Ellen, Martina Navratilova is now the oppressor of the LGBTQ.
Yeah.
So be very, very careful.
Yeah. Yeah. No. No. No, 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 no. It's not okay.
For instance, this is a classic line. I wish people wouldn't wear fur. I don't like it, but I'm friends with people who wear fur.
Okay.
See, I'm not. And you know why?
Yeah.
I don't know anybody who can afford it.
Yeah.
Do women still wear furs? I mean,
are they still expensive?
I don't know. I have no idea. I don't remember the last woman that I know that had fur on, even fake fur.
It's never cold enough in Texas
to
warrant fur.
That is true. That's a great point. Just because I don't agree with someone on everything doesn't mean I'm not going to be friends with them. When I say be kind to one another, I don't mean only people who think the same way that you do. I mean be kind to everyone, she said. Hmm. Her audience erupted in support of applause.
Yeah, okay.
Well, that was apparently on her show.
All right.
She did that.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I guess. If you say so.
I guess.
Well, good for her.
My favorite headline. NBA scrambles after China angered by Houston Rockets regrettable pro-democracy tweet. That's my favorite headline. NBA scrambles after China angered by Houston Rockets' regrettable pro-democracy tweet. We can't have any pro-democracy statements come from the NBA, damn it.
Well, it's not just China that's upset.
The NBA's upset.
Well, every candidate that's running for president on the left, they were also upset. So where do you stand there? Oh, somebody's got to ask that question at the next debate.
What?
Well, do you support pro-democracy or China?
Julian Castro came out against the NBA.
Well, yes, along with Ted Cruz. Yes.
Yes.
So there's one. We have one. We found one. Okay, now let's talk about any of them that actually might become president one day.
Well, he's claiming pro-democracy, that he's pro-democracy. Is he really with his plans?
Well, if you support open borders here, would you want to, I don't know, I mean, I guess... Anti-communism. Anti-socialism? See, there's the question. Where is that balance for the left?
I have no idea.
Well, if you're Castro, you're at some point, you got to have a place where you draw that line, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Eventually, because you're going to be challenged by your own party,
right?
On that, yes.
But is his own party totally against communism? That's my question.
No.
So where do you draw the line?
Well, you're dealing with a significant portion of that party that's furious with Ellen. Remember, that's to say. You're dealing with the party that's furious. If you do you remember, what was it? Elton John played Rush Limbaugh's wedding.
Yeah, and he also talked about how you know how he admired. I shouldn't use the word admired, but he complimented George W. Bush because of the money that the U.S. gave to Africa to battle the AIDS crisis.
Right. And how W promoted that.
Right.
Right.
And I don't know what the woke status is of there's got to be a woke meter for each of these artists and entertainers, right? Somewhere.
You're going to make me put that in Google. A woke meter.
Right. How woke is this celebrity? If no one's doing that, we should get on that right now. Now, the problem is, I have no idea what I'm doing in that regard. I need somebody else to follow up. Is there one?
It's not a woke meter. It's a woke-o-meter.
Woke-o-meter. Yeah, I mean, there you go.
There's images.
Woke-o-meter. Yeah, there you go. Woke-o-meter.
There's images of it.
Oh, no. See? There you go.
It does exist.
I knew it had to. There's no way it couldn't. I mean, there's no way we would be, in today's society, we would be without one, right? A woke-o-meter.
Woke has been added to the dictionary, but what does it mean? And that's from, they don't have a date on that.
Yeah.
Okay. And I can't get to it. It won't come up. Here it is. Woke has been added to the dictionary, but what does it really mean?
Mm-hmm.
And this was in 2017.
Right.
What does woke mean? What's the woke definition? In the modern day context, woke is defined as originally well-informed, up-to-date. Mm. Now, chiefly, it is alert to racial or social discrimination and injustice. Woke means being aware, knowing what is going on in the community.
Right. Okay.
No, woke, I think, is just a new word for being liberally politically correct.
I think ultra PC is what I would call it.
Ultra PC, right.
Yes.
Right. Ultra PC to the point of before you say anything, your complete focus is will could anybody possibly be offended by what I am saying? Anybody.
Right.
Now, I think that all liberals, see, we're not for censoring. We don't want you to be quiet. We just truly want you to practice being woke and understand that the definition of woke means before you say anything, think about if there is any of the billions of people on the planet that might be offended. And if you have to think that way before you speak, nobody on the left will ever speak again.
Right.
So we're not advocating censorship. We're advocating wokeness.
Mm-hmm. And you have to be careful. You know, you can't, because you can be going down one road and it be leading to a certain goal of yours. Interesting that the Rolling Stone has an article, "The Whistleblower Probably Isn't." In other words, it's and here's the sub-headline, again, Rolling Stone. "It's an insult to real whistleblowers to use the term with the Ukraine Gate protagonist." Okay? In other words, Rolling Stone acknowledging that the whistleblower actually isn't a whistleblower.
Oh, okay. All
okay?
right. Okay,
but in terms of the whole woke thing,
right?
Here's why. From the position of this writer at Rolling Stone, because it's an insult to people like, as they have their picture here, the real American whistleblowers like Chelsea Manning. See what they've done? It didn't take long, did it? It was only a couple of weeks.
Well, that takes
Matt,
us...
Matt Tybee, I think, is his last name.
That takes us right to our next topic.
Yeah. Right? Okay.
Can you imagine this happening? Hmm. Imagine just in the next couple of weeks. House Democrats are weighing extraordinary steps to secure testimony from a whistleblower whose complaint prompted an impeachment inquiry. Not really. It's not an impeachment inquiry. Masking his identity to prevent President Donald Trump's congressional allies from exposing the individual, according to three officials familiar with the deliberations. The steps under consideration, you ready for this?
All right.
Include having the whistleblower testify from a remote location, obscuring the individual's appearance and voice, these officials said. So can you imagine on TV that there's Adam Schiff stating, we are now going to, on TV, we are now going, like this is a mob trial,
mm-hmm.
and you have a witness in the witness protection program. I think that's what they're trying to do. I think they're trying to set it up this way.
Right.
Where you have a live public testimony of this whistleblower with their, because they need this kind of protection. This kind of protection is needed because they overheard the president on a call with a foreign leader that the transcript has been released. And because they have faked the point that this person's life is in danger because they were talking about the mob-like Trump administration. And so they're going to have an interview with the person's face, can you imagine,
mm-hmm.
blurred out.
Right.
And an electronic processor in that voice. Yes, sir. Mm-hmm. I believe that Trump is a traitor.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Can you imagine if they go through that? Can you imagine if they do that? If they go through that kind of drama?
No, I think it's right in line with what an Adam Schiff would want. Because what's greater, you know, what is greater a theater, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
It's and this all has been nothing but theater so far.
Mm-hmm.
Still, we don't have a crime.
No.
So what do you do? Well, make it look like a crime.
Make it look like a crime.
How many times did they say this is what Watergate looked like in the whole Russian collusion thing?
Yeah.
This is what water. This is what a cover up and a crime feels like. This is what obstruction feels like. What does that mean?
Well, it depends how I feel.
Well, it what it means is
my feelings apparently.
What it means is, and did you see the insane idea of impeaching the vice president first?
Yes.
And then Nancy Pelosi, Speaker of the House,
yes,
would become the vice president?
Yes.
That's from House of Cards, you idiots. That's how Frank Underwood, played by Kevin Spacey, actually eventually became president.
Oh, they live in their own little fantasy world,
no,
don't
but,
they?
Yeah, the
they
point really is that they want this kind of drama because they want it to look like some kind of Hollywood movie. They really want it to look like a movie. They want this to come off as something overly dramatic.
And Adam Schiff as the Joker.
Yes.
But not that Joker.
Now, what if they paint their faces? For years, we didn't know what the members of KISS really looked like. No one did.
Wow. Yeah. We're just having too much fun. All right, 866-90-RED-EYE.
Tips from J.J. Keller and Associates Incorporated on proposed hours of service rules. A new era for HOS? In August, FMCSA announced its much-anticipated proposal for changes to the rules for hours of service. FMCSA focused on five potential changes. They include the 30-minute break rule, modifying the split sleeper berth exception, split duty break extension of the 14-hour clock, extending the adverse driving exception, and extending the short-haul exception for drivers of CDL vehicles. Let's look at each proposal this month. First, with a 30-minute break rule, drivers would gain flexibility by requiring the break to prevent 8 hours of driving time without interruption of at least 30 minutes. Under the proposal, this rule could help cut down on your consecutive hours behind the wheel, reduce fatigue driving, and possibly avoid a serious health condition. This tip was brought to you by J.J. Keller and Associates Incorporated. Visit us at jjkeller.com.
This has been the Meritor Driver Report, brought to you by Pilot Flying J, Shell Rotella, and Meritor Aftermarket. Run with the bull.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Curley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE.
This hour brought to you by Freightliner. Run smart, helping you run more efficiently is Freightliner's number one goal.
We keep getting this, so I want to go to Steve in Michigan here. We keep getting this mindset. Steve, welcome. You're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show.
How you doing, guys? Good morning.
Very good.
Yeah, I called in, and I was telling your guy that I don't actually believe that there is a whistleblower. I believe that this is something that Schiff and his lawyers have cooked up. And they're trying to find a fall guy for it. That's why the first one fell through, and now they're going for a second one.
Well, we keep getting this. We've gotten this. We got a couple of emails on this already. There is somebody who is a whistleblower outside of Schiff coordinating it, and that's because the inspector, he went through the inspector general. So there is somebody there who's claiming to be a whistleblower. There is a person.
You think it's somebody maybe they seeked out to take the fall for it?
I don't know. Most likely one of the things we're thinking of is because the inspector general's report is coming out on supposed to come out on Friday. And by the way, John Ratcliffe said that on Sunday. I haven't seen any other story that's backed that up. But he says the IG report's coming out on FISA abuse. I do believe there is some problem in the intelligence community. And this came from the intelligence community. Whoever this whistleblower is, whoever this person is, knew at least and was correct on parts of the actual transcript. Mm-hmm. Not all of it, because they had stuff that was wrong, but they were right on parts of it, so they did have some information. Well, Schiff wouldn't know that. Schiff wouldn't know that, even though this whistleblower apparently first went to Adam Schiff, whoever this person is, went to Schiff, and then or to Schiff's people, and then went back to the inspector general, but did not tell the inspector general that he had communicated with Schiff's people. So there is a person, we just don't know who they are and why they are there.
Right. Yeah. It's, and we don't know, again, we don't know the status of that person, or if somebody directed them to go there, or if they're a so-called patsy, you know, someone as a, that's going to be the fall guy, in order to, I don't know, fulfill a need politically. We don't know. This is all the more reason for transparency here, because number one, it doesn't apply because it's the president of the United States. So
right.
Whistleblower doesn't even apply.
Doesn't apply, no.
So the protection should not be granted.
No.
But if that person has something to say, then great. Let them say it out in the open in front of the American people.
Men, women, children, dogs, cats. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley on America's Red Eye Radio.
And he's Eric Harley. I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE.
This hour brought to you by Freightliner. Run smart, helping you run more more efficiently and affordably. It's Freightliner's number one goal. Check out our podcast every single day. This program is podcast every day. And thank you, podcasters. We love you very much. Thank you. And also, check out the Extra Mile podcast, talking with industry experts from trucking, all walks of trucking. In fact, some regulatory issues that we're talking about include ELDs. There is another deadline coming up in December. You should know about that. Check out the Extra Mile for more information on that. The NPRM, Notice of Proposed Rulemaking on Hours of Service, and much more. The discussions on the Extra Mile right there when you want them. And you can check it all out at redeyeradioshow.com.
Let's go to Greg in Indianapolis about the impeachment games. Greg, you're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Gary, Eric. Thanks for having me. Hey, I cannot believe you guys are criticizing the Democrats for trying to hide the whistleblower's identity. I mean, can you imagine? We've seen the president attack everybody on Twitter. You know, I mean, can you imagine if you were the whistleblower, he knew your identity? What would happen between the president and his supporters? I mean, you would lose your job. You've got your family to worry about. I mean, the safety
well,
of
wait them. A, well, wait a minute. Hold it. Hold it.
Yes.
Back up here. So the retaliation by the president would be that he would fire you.
Yeah, I mean, that could be a good possibility. I don't know if he can legally do that.
Well, right. Well, that's why we're addressing every point to see if you have a point. Because first you said you are surprised at our opinion on it. Apparently, either you haven't listened to everything that we have stated on this, or you just did that in order to make a dramatic point. But number one, if it's somebody who was an intelligence agent, the president can't fire him. If it's somebody that's in the president's cabinet, he can. But this gentleman or gentle person is not a whistleblower, because the whistleblower law does not apply to the president of the United States. If you understand the whistleblower law in the intelligence agencies, it's supposed to be used, for example, let me just come up with a wild example that I just probably made up. Let's say you had somebody in the intelligence agencies really high up that knew that the Democrats had paid for information, false information, that they had gotten from the Russians, and the intelligence man kept pushing it as legit intelligence when he knew it was Russian disinformation in order to destroy the legitimacy of the 2016 election and the person who won it. Now, that person who did that, who attempted to legitimize something that they knew was false, I think that would be an example of a whistleblower, of somebody in the intelligence agency, the CIA, who would look at that person who was high up in the CIA and whistleblow that and say that's wrong because the head of the CIA knew that it was Russian disinformation and propaganda and tried to legitimize it across the intelligence agencies in order to destroy the 2016 election. That would be just a wild example of a just out of the blue of a whistleblower, a legit whistleblower out there. The whistleblower has nothing to do with it. And when you come forward, if you work directly for the president and you go to Adam Schiff, because remember, even this whistleblower did not follow the rules and regulations. The whistleblower went to the Democrats first. And you're not supposed to do that. That is, even if you're a legit whistleblower, you're not supposed to do that. Because at that point, are you transferring top secret information to somebody who is not authorized? You're supposed to go to the inspector general first. Well, he didn't, or she didn't. Well, they went to Adam Schiff. The Democrats did not go to the Republicans, and the Democrats only went to the Democrats, and then when they went back to the inspector general, never told the inspector general that they had gone to the Democrats first before that. The inspector general did not know. That does not sound like something that's on the up and up to me. And when you try to destroy somebody else and you accuse somebody else and you go public, that person has an absolute right to know who you are for proper cross-examination, to know what your possible motives are. So if you're surprised at our opinion, please tell me where I am wrong in any point that I have made.
Well, I don't know if you're wrong or not, but that even strengthens my argument. I mean, if he doesn't have the whistleblower protection,
okay, well, he doesn't. Well, he again, he has, again, I mean, again. What you're saying is you're not. No, we're done. Because again, you said you're not going to address any of my things.
Well, and you don't know if we're wrong or right here. The person does not qualify as a whistleblower.
Right. Person doesn't qualify.
End of story. They don't get the protection.
And I don't know why the Republicans haven't been stronger on that, because nobody's made that argument that they are.
And that's it. They are not a whistleblower.
Right.
Now, if they want to go forward with their complaint, they can go forward through the proper means, but they are not afforded the anonymity that a whistleblower would be afforded.
Right.
End of story.
And again, not following the protocol of the whistleblower, even if you are a legit whistleblower at that particular point, there are suspicions at without question at that point that you have political motivations.
Yep.
And are not a true whistleblower to begin with.
Right. So that's where it all starts and ends.
Yes.
Are they a whistleblower? And the answer is no, they're not.
And so what you're trying – look, I understand where you're coming from. As somebody who probably does not like the president, you believe that he should not be afforded, just like Kavanaugh. Well, Kavanaugh's accuser should be able to testify in private. Nope, sorry, that's not – or, you know, private without giving up their anonymity. Doesn't work that way in our system.
No.
You can't make an accusation of wrongdoing and not be cross-examined. Well, you're up for retaliation. Well, that's what happens when you decide to play with the big boys. When you play with the big boys and you enter that, if you make the accusation, well, then, and you're not an official whistleblower, and it doesn't apply to anything. And that's the other thing, too. What this whistleblower is attempting to whistleblow on, this alleged whistleblower, is something politically that they disagree with. Not a wrongdoing and a crime being broken. And by the way, everybody knows, maybe the caller didn't know, but everybody knows where I was going in my absurd example of how the whistleblower law might apply.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is not, again, not a difficult scenario to break down.
Right.
They don't qualify for the protection.
Yeah.
If they were a true whistleblower, we could have the conversation. But they're not.
They're not. Doesn't apply to the president's conversation.
Nope.
With another foreign leader.
No, it does not.
So,
because then you could have anybody who disagreed with any president come out and complain and decide to do that at every turn. What this is Russian collusion 2.0, because they failed at Russian collusion 1.0.
Well, again, we're to the point where nobody can tell us what the crime is.
Right.
What's the crime? What did the president do? Well, we didn't like the politics of it. So there's no crime.
And?
Right. The Adam Schiff lied for over a year. Is still lying. And claiming that he had, remember, I've got the evidence, and it's not circumstantial that the president colluded with the Russians to hack and or change the outcome of the election.
Right.
Doesn't exist.
Nope.
He lied about it.
Yep.
Should he be expelled from office? He's leading the investigation. Did you notice it was quiet yesterday?
Yeah, it was. It seemed to be, well, it was all about, of course, Turkey and Syria. But it seemed to be quiet on the whole impeachment front. The Democrats enjoy the cover of that distraction, taking the day to regroup. Because the question is, where do you go? You can't exit from this. They're going to have to move on inquiry and ultimately impeachment.
Right. And we've said all along, we don't know how they... How does Pelosi back up? Oh, I know what I wanted to ask you.
What?
You know, I missed it. I have to admit, on yesterday's show, I feel much better today. But my allergies kicked in yesterday. And it kicked in sometime, I think, when I was sleeping and before I came in on the show. The temperature cooled down, the wind picked up, and my allergies were horrible yesterday. At time, and you and I were talking about this off the air, we had mind blank at times. And so when you actually, when we were having the discussion at AOC, I completely think I missed the point you might be trying to make, that when AOC talked about over the weekend, she talked about, well, I really don't care about impeachment. And were you trying to make the point to me that I completely missed that her doing that is the first sign that, is that the first sign of trying to give Nancy Pelosi an out?
Yeah. That was the whole point.
That's what I mean. I missed that yesterday when you said that. I'm like,
that was her walk away.
I wasn't sure where you were going, and all of a sudden that hit me today, and I went, oh man, I missed that yesterday.
That was her walk away.
I had complete mind blank, and I'm thinking, because AOC's been the big push for impeachment, if she backs off and says it's not important, does that give Nancy the out? And so have they had the talk that, look, we got to make a big deal of this, but then we've got to slowly move and just not discuss it anymore? Because how do you continue this?
Right. Where do you go?
Since the very beginning, it hasn't gone in the direction that the Democrats have wanted, just like Russian collusion, which took 2.5 years. It kept going in the opposite direction.
Mm-hmm.
This keeps going in the opposite direction.
Yes. And I don't know, again, I think they're crossing their fingers for a major distraction, a major out, an opportunity to move on from this and not have to officially move on it. I mean, between now and the end of next year, who was it? Adam Schiff said the end of the year. He didn't say what year.
Well, can you believe anything that he says?
No, you can't.
Well, you know, as we said, he lied. He lied about the contact with the whistleblower.
Well, that could be his out. You know, 2 years from now, or, you know, well, we're still working on it. I said end of the year. I didn't say what year. I mean, that's right out of his own playbook. So
wow.
I think right now they're probably looking for an out. They're looking for cover. Because I don't think they want to move forward on it. I think they realize right now that it's so loose. This whole thing is so loose and open. But those Democrats that are in blue districts and red states, where they really need to, the ones that need to, I'm not talking about necessarily the moderate Democrats, but the ones who may have a shift in the population in their district, may have a number of things they're concerned about already for November of next year, certainly don't want this on their plate in their district. Just my thought. I don't know if that's actually the case, but certainly that has to be a consideration right now.
866-90-RED-EYE.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Carley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE.
This hour for Freightliner, run smart. Helping you run more efficiently is Freightliner's number one goal.
So if the House has the, quote, so-called whistleblower testify from a remote location, obscuring the individual's appearance and voice, if the House does that, what keeps the Senate and the House Judiciary Committee and Lindsey Graham from saying, nope, sorry, you testified before us in public. We are suing. I believe that you'll have the House before he ever appears in testimony. The House will sue in the court to say this is not a whistleblower.
Yeah.
That the federal courts, yeah. The federal courts will get involved in it, because you need to enforce whether this is the whistleblower law being followed or not. You just don't claim whistleblower status and get it if you're not a whistleblower. That still hasn't been explained, but the Republicans aren't pushing for an explanation on it. Why not?
Do they know? Do they know that there's not going to be any movement, that this really is going to go nowhere? Or are they just waiting for the move and they do their legal move then?
I was just amazed because it was quiet yesterday. And anytime it's quiet, because this thing for the last 2 weeks was nonstop. Every day there was another bombshell. And all of a sudden yesterday, it all went quiet.
Right.
Why?
Yeah. I think they are looking for that cover. I think they are looking for that out. Because otherwise, and if you have a major distraction, a huge geopolitical event, then that gives you that cover, then you can remain quiet and come up with a new strategy. If you're Adam Schiff right now or a Democrat in the House, you're probably wondering and probably sweating all of this.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. It's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or just starting your day, welcome to the show. From the Pilot Flying J Studios, this is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. Get our app, listen to our podcast. Okay, not complicated. Get the app.
Yep.
Download it.
Yeah.
Listen.
Yeah.
End of story.
Yeah.
Anytime you want.
Mm-hmm.
So when I woke up last night, a friend of mine texted me and said, could you explain to me the whistleblower story?
Mm.
I'm just waking up. I was like, no, not now.
Yeah, right.
I mean, all at once right now? And I had to explain to her, I said, you have to understand that what we go through in a week used to be what we went through in a month or 2 months or 6 months or a year. And so I thought about it and I went, wait a minute, maybe I can explain it to her. So I actually called her and left her a message, and actually took me about 2 to 3 minutes to do that, I think. And so I actually laid it out. But I just thought about that how everything gets so complicated so quickly. And to add to it, that as I told you during the top of the hour, I said, why does it seem like everything is tainted in any investigation that the Democrats are involved in with the President of the United States? Mm. Why is everything dirty? Or why is the appearance that everything is dirty and nobody is being up front?
Mm.
And I say this because one of the things that has been lost, and we talked a little bit about it yesterday. We talked about how the special envoy, and I can't think of his name now. Right now,
Volker.
Volker, mm-hmm. When he testified last Thursday. How the Democrats came out of that, and they weren't really happy. But what it showed, what Volker showed, was there was no quid pro quo.
Right.
So they lost that on Thursday. And then you had the Inspector General, Michael Acheson, the Inspector General for the U.S. intelligence agencies. He testified on Friday. And what did we learn and talk about yesterday on that? That the IG had no idea and said he was never told and had no idea that the alleged whistleblower first went to Adam Schiff's office, just the Democrats, not the Republicans. Mm-hmm. And we know the Adam Schiff lie on that.
Mm-hmm.
So why do you lie on that? As we said, for on one end, Adam Schiff, when he found out his office had been contacted by this person, should have gone immediately to Devin Nunes, correct?
Right, exactly.
To make it bipartisan and say, look, this person contacted us. I want you to know, or we had a whistleblower contact us. Here's what they said. I'm going to relate it only to you. Here's what they said, just so you know that this is not political. And I sent this person back. My staff sent him back to the Inspector General. That never happened. Why nope. not?
Right.
I would do that, right? Wouldn't you do that?
Well, I would want the transparency in place so that if something did come of this complaint, that I was ahead of it. Because there's no reason to believe, again, that Adam Schiff, well, we don't have reason yet, to believe that Adam Schiff or anyone on his staff solicited that so-called whistleblower. In other words, called them and told them to come over. That person showed up at their office. So far, that's what we know. That's what we believe to be true. So if that's the case, then no harm, no foul. If the people in his office, of course, go to him, which, of course, they did. But at that point, he stops the train and says, wait, I'm going to call the top Republican on this committee right now. We're going to nip this in the bud, and I'm going to tell them exactly what happened, and we're going to have full transparency here, because if there is something, again, to the complaint, then you want to make sure that the complaint sees the light of day without any procedural issues.
And he didn't do that.
He didn't.
That now sent back what was told to his staff, we don't know. But he knew about it, and when asked about it, he lied. So you have that. And then we found out, and this I'm reading part of the excerpts from Sean Davis and TheFederalist.com from the testimony of Michael Atkinson. The Inspector General for U.S. intelligence agencies acknowledged that his office secretly changed the key whistleblower forms and rules in September, but he refused to explain to lawmakers why those changes were backdated to August.
Right.
As the Federalist reported and the Intelligence Community Inspector General confirmed, the spy watchdog secretly changed its whistleblower forms and internal rules in September to eliminate a requirement that whistleblowers provide firsthand evidence to support any allegations of wrongdoing. In a press release last week, the ICIG confessed that it had changed its rules in response to an anti-Trump complaint filed on August 12th. That complaint, which was declassified and released by President Trump in September, was based entirely on secondhand information, much of which was shown to be false, and we went through points by points what was false in it, following the declassification and release of the telephone conversation. Michael Atkinson, the Intelligence Community Inspector General, told lawmakers during a committee oversight hearing on Friday that the whistleblower forms and the rule changes were made in September, even though the new forms and guidance, which were not uploaded to the ICIG's website until September 24th, state that they were changed in August. Despite having a full week to come up with an explanation for his office's decisions to secretly change its forms to eliminate the requirement for firsthand evidence and to backdate those changes to August, Atkinson refused to provide any explanation to lawmakers baffled at his behavior. When pressed on the curious changes, I don't know, I just thought of Altoids there.
Right.
Was it curiously strong?
Curiously strong.
Yes. When pressed on the curious changes and attempts to obscure the timeline of his revisions, Atkinson refused to explain why the forms were backdated to August, even though they were not made until September. The ICIG previously stated that it changed its forms and guidance in response to recent press inquiries regarding the anti-Trump complaint, of which Congress was not even notified until the second week of September. The new forms, which were not uploaded to the website until September 24th, nonetheless stated that the revisions were made back in August. And that's why you and I initially questioned this and said, what do you mean? What do you mean they were done in secret? What are you talking about? These are rules and regulations that should be on the website, because a whistleblower is something that it may be done in secret, but the rules and regulations for what whistleblowers can do needs to be made public, so anybody in the intelligence community or any government official knows what the whistleblower laws are. Why would you keep it secret?
Right.
Well, now we know that they were uploaded, they were completed and created in September of this year and backdated to August, and the Inspector General will not tell Congress why. Is everything perverted? Is everybody dirty?
It explains it explains the scrambling in all of this.
The lawmakers found honed in on the discrepancy during Atkinson's appearance on Capitol Hill on Friday. How could the forms have been changed back in August if they were changed in response to press inquiries that could not have been made until mid-September at the earliest? And so, you know, you add this to everything else that we got from Thursday and Friday of last week. It's no wonder things were extremely quiet yesterday. The Democrats have nothing. The whole think about this. Now the whistleblower law is completely perverted. Now the Inspector General is completely perverted and suspect. Nothing is clean.
You know, it would explain a great deal. It would explain all of the scrambling that's been going on, well, since the beginning of this. How the narrative has changed. How many times has the narrative changed on this?
Over a dozen.
Right. Because they keep changing the reality of it as well, which really is baseless. You know, the part of creating something that is false, that is baseless, that really is nothing, that is built out of zero, just like Russian collusion was, is that you've got to keep changing things, because every question is going to expose possibly expose the truth.
And so now what do we have? Just like the Russian collusion. What we found out is there's no Russian collusion.
No.
There was no crime committed. We're now finding out that there was no promise. There was no quid pro quo. Everything that appears to be dirty and perverted are those that are ratting on the president. Is it not?
Yeah. Yeah.
Just like last time. I mean, the similarities, you shake your head and you say, I mean, it just is, because, you know, we talked about this. If you can't trust our intelligence agencies, if you can't trust the management of the FBI, if you can't trust the Department of Justice, because we see everything that happened, we see how something that was obviously never verified in the Russian collusion investigation, the dossier that was paid for by Hillary, gotten by a former British spy from the Kremlin, that the intelligence agencies and the FBI and the Department of Justice were so set on destroying Donald Trump that they never thought for a minute, is this actually the Russian collusion idea here? Is this the Russians? Are we actually enabling the Russians to interfere on the election by accepting this dossier as gospel fact when we don't have the evidence that any of it is credible whatsoever?
Well, I mean, look at the nature of it. If you're going to, well, the whole Carter Page warrant thing. They go to the FISA courts. They didn't get the warrant that they wanted. So what do? They commission ultimately a foreign national to get information, bogus information from the Russians, take it as a dossier, and then use that as part of the next petition in order to get and retain, keep renewing that FISA warrant. And it was bogus information. So it shouldn't surprise anyone of everything that they're doing, quite possibly here.
But when in the accusation that Trump has done something wrong or committed a crime, across the board, what we find out later on is that the problem is not Trump. The problem is are the people in the Obama administration and now in this administration that seem to not follow any of the rules and regulations, mm-hmm. not be upfront, not tell the truth. It is everybody making the accusations against Trump that are the ones that when everything is, when finally we get through all the lies and all the accusations against Trump and everything falls apart, what we find out is they're the dirty ones. They're the ones who have not followed the rules and regulations.
Yeah.
They're the ones that have perverted the process, not Trump. And we're heading this way again. The accusations may be different, but the MO is the same.
Well, and I mean, if you have activists at every level, this president is a love or hate president, period. So in any given scenario, in any given position, whether it's a government job, whether it's the intelligence community or someone at a bank or someone in the military or anywhere else, there is that room. In fact, in some cases, likelihood of a certain level of activism. And if there was a clip going around, you probably saw it, Chuck Schumer on MSNBC with Rachel Maddow saying, look, you know, you go after the intelligence community, they'll come at you, you know, in a fierce manner, basically, yeah. is what he was saying. And then she asked the question, well, how would they do that? Well, I don't know. Whoa. You just said something and made a claim.
Well, acknowledging that they would do that shows you have a problem in your intelligence agencies, does it not? And we stated that at that time.
You've got a deep problem in deep state, no doubt.
And you know, it's got nothing to do with, look, we criticize the president. Example, check the first half hour out of our show.
Yeah.
That's got nothing to do with this. That's policy differences.
Right.
That may be policy differences and honesty in policy differences. That's got nothing to do with this here. This is at everything that we see here that the Democrats have claimed against the president end up being not true, and the perversion of the system comes from them. Yep. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90 Red Eye. Yes, the impeachment games continue, and we'll get your calls and comments following the bottom of the hour. Just reading here about the visibly pregnant Native American. New records obtained by the Washington Free Beacon contradict Massachusetts Senator and Democratic presidential candidate Elizabeth Warren's claim that she was fired after her first year of teaching because she was visibly pregnant. Minutes from from a 1970 meeting of New Jersey's Riverdale Board of Education show Warren was unanimously approved for a second-year contract. Minutes from the meeting the next year show that Warren's resignation was accepted with regret. Huh. In Warren's version of the story, which she has used on the Democratic primary debate stage and often tells during stump speeches, describes losing her dream job and her calling. She uses the story to explain her move from teaching to law school and to lament difficulties that women face in the workplace. By the end of the first year, I was visibly pregnant, and the principal did what principals did in those days, wished me luck, and hired someone else for the job. Okay?
No, right.
Not true.
Wow. Here is your forecast.
The frontal boundary that's delivered some much cooler temperatures to Texas and the South is continuing to push eastward. We'll see the rain showers from overnight continue to move off the East Coast today, but extend from the New England states down through New York and the Mid-Atlantic. Late tonight, cooler conditions will prevail across most of the nation, thanks to that cooler air coming in from Canada. Tomorrow, look for another snowmaker to take shape in Iowa, in western Montana, and northwestern Wyoming. If you have travel plans in and out of the Pacific Northwest, check ahead on conditions at your ultimate destination. Looking ahead for places like Great Falls, Montana, the focus of the most recent blizzard, is expecting another foot of snow. That'll begin on Tuesday night and continue through the day through tomorrow. There's a look at your national forecast from Red Eye Radio. I'm meteorologist John Trout.
Together in common harmony, Gary McNamara and Eric Harley on Red Eye Radio.
And he is Eric Harley. I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RUD-EYE. We go to Ron in Edison, New Jersey. Ron, welcome. You're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show.
Hi.
Hi. You're on the radio.
Okay, sorry about that. I wasn't sure. This whole impeachment thing is a bunch of crap, and you guys were just saying that the IG changed its rules in September before this ever came out due to press releases or press inquiries. Well, if that's the case, who in the hell leaked it in the first place then? Because it had to come out of Schiff's office, the whistleblower, or the IG's office if they were getting press inquiries before they changed the rules.
Yeah, I think that's the point, is that there were leaks.
Well, the story came out in the first, what, the first week of, what, like September 12th.
Mm.
So the story, but it came out, what, through the Post, right? Or was it the Post or the Times? I forgot who first had the story. So, yeah, somebody leaked it, yeah.
Yeah, and that being the case, this whole thing is garbage. They've been screaming that they're going to impeach this president since before he was even elected.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
They've been out there screaming this.
Yeah.
So this whole thing is a bunch of crap. And to be honest with you, the IG, because he didn't answer the damn questions, should be canned immediately and work your way right up the line. Get them all.
Well, I mean, we'll see where it goes. First of all, we have to find out who's responsible for what wrongdoing. I mean, I'd like to know. I still have a lot of questions, and thank you, Ron, about what the first so-called whistleblower told the staff members at Adam Schiff's office. Because
yes,
there's that leak there. Then there's the idea that, okay, the first whistleblower did not have first-hand knowledge, which means someone did. They got it from someone else, which means that person was going to be outed eventually, which is why they sought whistleblower protection. And there you have your second whistleblower. But keep in mind that the first so-called whistleblower wouldn't have been there, as Cheryl Atkinson points out. You know, what would you do if essentially you're the second whistleblower and you've been outed as a leaker? Because someone with secondhand knowledge got it from you, which means you leaked it, quite possibly. And if you're going to be outed as a leaker, you're going to seek protection any way you can. You're darn sure going to hire a lawyer, which is exactly what they did.
I was just looking. I was trying to find it because he makes a great point about, you know, the inspector general. I would demand you need to answer this question or you're fired and you wonder who was oversight. I'm just reading here from the Federal News Network. Members of Congress view inspector generals as an objective source of information aimed at combating fraud, waste, and abuse in government. But members of the House Oversight and Reform Committee have raised concerns about the capability of the federal IG community, known as the Council of Inspectors General, on integrity and efficiency to conduct internal oversight of other watchdog offices.
Right.
So I guess they have the Council of Inspectors General on integrity and efficiency. So I guess those are members of Congress that are a member of that committee. I don't know who's a member of that. But yeah, I mean, that would be my thing is my first. What do you mean you can't answer the question or you won't answer the question?
Right.
And I don't have the specific transcript of that, but that's you would think that. Look, the Republicans were quiet yesterday also, and they had a good Thursday and Friday. And so you wonder what the plans are going on. And again, I missed it yesterday, and I'm going to blame my allergies, because when you had brought it up, I just, for some reason, it didn't click in my head until yesterday when I was doing something. I went, oh, now I know where Eric was talking about. Oh, okay, that never clicked in my head. When AOC came out over the weekend and was talking to, I guess, some of her constituents and was asked about the impeachment, she goes, oh, that's no longer important. He should have been impeached from the very beginning, but we're...
She says she's totally over it.
Right, she's totally over it. And right. And you brought it up yesterday, and I don't know why, but I was just mind blank, whatever. And all of a sudden yesterday, I went, oh, I know where Eric was going. If she's dropping it, if she's not saying, we need to go forward with impeachment right now, is that the out for Nancy Pelosi?
Right.
Are they trying to find a way out now? Did they get into this, and as usual... Never cross their T's and put dots on the lowercase J's, and so they don't know where to go at this particular point, and they feel caught, and they're like, wow, how do we go forward with this? Because everything has fallen apart since the very beginning, and I'm sitting here thinking to myself that you've got to have a ton of Republicans saying, absolutely, yeah, right. Go ahead, make this big drama of the whistleblowers. Go ahead.
Right.
And then Senate, you get a hold of it, you know, or when they try to do it, that's when the Republicans, when they announce we are going to have this this whistleblower, talk, have the voice altered, the appearance altered, and do it from a remote location. And the Republicans go right to a federal judge and say, excuse us, the federal whistleblower law doesn't apply here. And they have to testify. They have to testify publicly, and then at that point, the whistleblower law, if the judge comes out and says the whistleblower law doesn't apply, or if they say it even does apply, either way. Well, no, because I believe a federal judge will finally come out and say it doesn't. The courts will say it doesn't because it doesn't apply. That if they still try to push it, the House tries to push it, and because they have the majority, the Democrats still try to give them anonymity, is when the Senate then will say, fine, we're going to do our own.
Yeah.
You come before the Judiciary Committee, and now we know who you are.
Right.
There's no way that they're going to testify and remain anonymous. That's not going to happen. It's not going to happen.
No. Because, well, first of all, it's... I think even a number of Democrats realize that's going to be too much of a show. There's no way, and they don't want that.
And what happens every time the Democrats decide to bring somebody before Congress, even if they don't have anonymity?
They get burned. Falls apart.
Where have they won one?
Exactly.
Mueller? Cohen?
Well, I mean, you go back to Kavanaugh and Ford, right?
Yeah.
Right, exactly. Cohen, I mean, that fell apart. And where has that won them anything? I mean, man, you go back to James Comey, Strzok. Did any of that serve any purpose at all for the left?
And even I saw the second whistleblower yesterday. Well, we have more whistleblowers who can verify parts of what the first whistleblower have said.
Hmm. Yeah, right.
It didn't say any new information can verify parts of it.
Yeah.
I'm just like, wow, this thing is just it falling apart every single day. When did you and I say it? Was it last Friday? Or was it even the Friday before?
About how long how it would be gone?
How fast this is falling apart.
Yeah, right.
Because we said it a couple days out, I think.
Well, every day the narrative was changing, and which means it was crumbling.
Yeah, it was a week ago Friday when we said it. Yeah,
yes, before as the narrative started to change each and every time, right. And the focus started to change.
We said this thing's falling apart real quick, and it's falling apart quick. And everybody who testifies that the Democrats are like, oh, we got them, and they go before, and it's like, boom, then they're quiet about it.
Right.
But it was the silence yesterday that got me. That's when I said, okay. And then, as you said yesterday, sorry I didn't pick up on it, when Ocasio-Cortez came out and said, oh, no, it's not, you know, I'm past impeachment.
Yeah.
He should have been impeached for everything a long time ago.
Well, and keep in mind, she's the one that was really, after the speaker, to move on impeachment.
Right.
Then all of a sudden, a couple of weeks later, she's over it. She's past it. I'm over that now. I'm moving on.
One has to ask, is that the out for Nancy Pelosi?
Right. Is she bowing out in order to give Nancy room here?
And since you don't have an official impeachment inquiry, you never have to end it, do you?
No, that's the whole thing. Is that was my whole point.
Yeah.
With Adam Schiff saying, you know, well, he believes there will be a vote by the end of the year. Well, he didn't say what year. but the point being is that they actually could go on with this unofficial inquiry. Well, at least until, I'm just guessing, their deadline is probably November 3rd of next year. Just a random date. I mean, I honestly believe that there's some of them saying, look, we impeach now. We spend our impeachment coin now. And then all of a sudden we rally his base and he wins with no problem, even in a soft economy. How about this? We wait and we impeach him in his second term early. Early 2021, we find something and we move on it. Now, the thing is, if he wins re-election, he's going to likely retain the Senate and he's going to gain some in the House.
Well, who knows? They might like him after if he wins re-election.
Well,
they
maybe
might get,
so.
They might get their Medicare for all.
If he doesn't have to run again and he wants to re-explore. Well, remember Ivanka. Ivanka is has his ear at every turn, and maybe he's told Ivanka, "I'll have more flexibility after the election."
as much infrastructure as you want,
right?
Let's go into $10 trillion in debt in 1 year. Massive infrastructure program,
paid family leave,
massive infrastructure,
Medicare for all.
Because remember, people forget. He talked about a Medicare-like system when he was campaigning.
Well,
forget about that.
How many of the rank and file, we've had a number of them call us since he was elected, saying, well, I'm a conservative, but I'm starting to warm to the idea of a single-payer system.
Yes.
I mean,
I'm a conservative, but
yeah. if there is a way to boil that healthcare frog slowly, it's this president probably that could get it done in terms of Republicans. Now, I think there's a number of them that would not be on board. The question is, how many are still left? We did the head count in the Senate. It's down to 0.3 conservatives in the Senate.
I'm a conservative, but I approve of the deficit.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
I'm a conservative, but I like Medicare for all.
Well, I mean, you hand people this huge gift, and then what do? Inevitably, you announce you're not going to run for re-election. You know, you give people this massive freebie, and then you move on. You go to work in the private sector. You know, I mean, that's for any conservatives that might be left on Capitol Hill. Again, are there enough of them to actually bring a vote like that down? Or are there enough moderates or rhinos or whatever you want to call them in the Republican Party to get it done? I still have my doubts.
I still have doubts about Medicare for All being approved by the
Senate. Well, Medicare for All is one thing, but a much greater move toward a single-payer system? I don't know. I honestly don't count that out just yet. Ask me 18 months from now, because things will change drastically between now and then.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Coming up, more with Gary McNamara and Eric Harley. It's Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. Just to correct something out there, just so people understand, we did not say that the inspector general learned of the whistleblower from media reports. Okay.
No.
Some people mistakenly are thinking that is the case. What we said was the inspector general changed the rules in late September. Due to media inquiries, the whistleblower rules and regulations, but backdated it to August. Now, the quote whistleblower, because we don't believe the person's a whistleblower, went to the inspector general in, I think it was August 12th.
Right.
So no, the inspector general did not learn about it through media inquiries. He claimed he changed the rules because of media inquiries, would not tell Congress why, though. They backdated it to August.
Yeah. And they, you know, there were so many different media reports on this at first because the story kept changing. No wonder the ICIG was stating that as part of the reason. Again, we don't know everything about this so far, which is why the only thing we call for in this case and every case is transparency.
Mm-hmm.
And we need that completely on this situation.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One.